And that was a deliberate few seconds of silence for all those who have perished or were killed in the wars promoted by the U.S. Empire. This is a book review, The $1 trillion Silencer, Joan Roelofs, R-O-E-L-O-F-S. If my voice sounds odd, it's the tail end of a head cold, but I wanted to jump into this book since I've been sitting around a lot, so it gives me something to do. This is my footnote. You can hear my voice has cleared up since recording the episode. This is Monk, and this is Get Lit with Literature. So I'm going to throw a bunch of statistics at you and make some points and get to the gists, basically going through the book and some of the highlights. Now, this is a perfect segue to a tribute to John Pilger, who spoke of being aware of the hidden agendas. Well, this is perhaps the mother of all hidden agendas. Again, the $1 trillion silencer, why there's so little anti-war protest in the United States. The answer is in the title, $1 trillion. But, so I was actually a little bit hesitant to get the book, figuring, military-industrial complex, it seeps into the society, blah, blah, blah. You know, what am I going to learn? Do I want to read it? But man, did I learn a lot. It is just chock full of information. Heavily footnoted. It's virtually like every little section is a page or three. So it's kind of an easy read in that sense. It's also tons of information. She delivers it in a just clear, straightforward way, not overly laying it. She doesn't lay it thick on the reader. She just puts it out there, makes it clear as day. And another thing that occurred to me is people are always pointing the finger at the 1% or the 0.01%, as if that's going to change the world if we can just get to the 1%. Well, not so fast. And so if you read this book, you will learn that it is so ingrained. The military system, the mentality, the ideology, and the literal violence, and the promotion of the violence, and the global mass murder is so ingrained into the system that it's going to take way more than just a peace movement and way more than just getting to the 1%. That's my opinion on it. Some statistics to throw at you. As I put in one of my books in 2017, the U.S. Empire has been at war 224 of its 241 years. So that's 6 years ago, 7 years ago, so you up the numbers there. So you basically have a system that is built on war and empire. Built on empire. You have quotes backing that up. George Washington, 1786, the foundation of a great empire is laid. And then you have 1780, Thomas Jefferson, Empire of Liberty, a theme developed by Jefferson's to identify the responsibility of the United States to spread freedom across the world. This has been exemplified. This is on Wikipedia, the James Monroe Doctrine, Manifest Destiny, Gettysburg Address, Roosevelt Corollary, Wilsonianism, Truman Doctrine, Reagan Doctrine, Bush Doctrine, ad nauseum. And I mean that literally, and there'll be a bit of sarcasm in this episode to compensate. More statistics. Since World War II, U.S. globally has killed 20 million people. And in the recent global war of terror, which has been ongoing, sadly, I think it was like 1 to 3 million people. This is an ingrained, empire. It's just a freaking killing machine. But the point of this book, see, I'm ranting here, but the point of this book is that to get underneath the blatant violence of it, which many ignore, and why they ignore it is because of the funding down to, like, Boy Scouts and ROTC and philanthropic events, philanthropic stuff. So I'll get into the details more, but I just wanted to set up the wider premise of the book, in my opinion. But all this pales in comparison to McDonald's has served 1 billion hamburgers. So, you know, 20 million? What's 20 million? What's 20 million people since World War II? Pardon the sarcasm again, but that is my defense mechanism for dealing with this ridiculous... Wait, I should say my Department of Defense mechanism. Actually, that's another technique of the silencer, is to play mess with your head. So the U.S. has the U.S. Department of Defense, but meanwhile, it's mostly offense. It's offensive, and it's on the prowl. So that is a lie right there, the Department of Defense. And Eisenhower aptly warned, as Roloff points out in the book, as Roloff points out, Eisenhower actually warned of the military-industrial complex in his famous speech before leaving office. And as she points out, he would be astounded by how things have morphed. So that's the gist of the book, is how insidious and how sneaky the military ideology is just ingrained in the U.S. way. And also, as I get to quote another one of my books, because I've been studying this stuff for 20-something years, and I followed the chart of first opening my eyes is Chalmers Johnson, who has some wonderful books, which I admittedly have not, I don't think I've read, but those are worth reading from what I've heard. And he was the first one that I learned about the empire of U.S. bases, like about 800 to 1,000 global bases. From there, I read Nick Turse's The Complex. And then there's David Vine's Base Nation. I think it's a Daniel Immerwahr. I haven't read that one, How to Hide an Empire. And then I saw this book come along, so I had to read it. And she points out what I pointed out in my 2003 Singing an Epic of Peace book. That's right, Singing an Epic of Peace, which actually, if you buy this book, I still have a lot of copies left. If you buy this book, the money goes to Simply Smiles, which helps to build homes and care facilities for children in Mexico and on the Lakota Reservation. But the military-industrial complex, this is what I wrote in 2003. Hollywood movie ad package ad nauseum meal deal next to nothing costs huge budget production association product recognition military, industrial, government, corporate, media, banking, insurance, stock market, EPA, Supreme Court, judicial, oligarchic, etc. complex. Thank you, Dwight D. Eisenhower. So simple. So that's how tangled it is. Now on to the actual book, now that I've given my little pre-review rant, and this is going to be at least two parts. So the book starts with chapter 1, the military establishment. Chapter 2, bases and installations. Chapter 3, contractors. Chapter 4, universities and research institutes. Chapter 5, which was the most, I think my most underlined chapter just because of the astounding hypocrisy. Philanthropy and nonprofit organizations. And state and local governments, and the final chapter, what can be done. So it needs to be said too that there are some positive things in a lot of the money that goes to certain organizations and actually helps people, sometimes actually helps clean up the environment. But if you have to step back and look at the big picture, and that's where, and that's, it's what I call, what I got from this is what I call the line. And the line that won't be crossed is not to mess with the military-industrial complex. So, you know, here's your helpful, you know, contribution of money to go clean up the river, to go help minorities, to go help poor people. But if you question the overall military-industrial complex, there goes your funding. So that's the line. And the other line is that, which came out... Which again, if you follow, if you listen to what I do or read what I do, this is one of my main topics. because the underlying premise of the U.S. at war for whatever it is, 95% of its existence, is that the native peoples, this is originally, if you hadn't already got the memo, this is originally the native peoples' original lands. And as I quoted in my book, one of my books, according to Hinkpe Topa, Four Arrows, more than 75% of pre-contact indigenous peoples were what scholars refer to as peaceful societies. So a lot of times, I mention this kind of stuff to people, and a lot of times the Department of Defense mechanism reaction is, but the natives fought too. The natives fought amongst each other as well. So you can't really point to the native people as, you know, being better than peaceful. Well, there's one statistic, and then you have that, according to my Lakota friend, there is no word for war or warrior in Lakota. So there it is. There's another moment of silencer. Do you think about that? Because a lot of native peoples get portrayed as, you know, great warriors and this and that, and some are, and they. But if you look at some of the history, the Lakota people, some of the only people to have defeated the U.S. Army ever, but they took on, my interpretation is that's how smart they are. They took on, out of self-defense, they took on the war mantle just to protect themselves and do what they can, and that's how good they were at it. They actually defeated the U.S. So the whole concept of war is not a part of this original land. There may have been skirmishes or small battles. From the history that I've learned, there were small battles. That's not, you know, you have an argument in your family. You don't want to talk to someone for a while. Then you talk to them, whatever. That's a normal part of humanity, and natives are no different in having that history and that experience. But we're talking about the overall bent and the overall consciousness. And here's another quote from Lakota Tioksin Ghost Horses book that I published, little chap book of prosatry, Children of the Sun, back in 2011. And hey, might as well throw in this bit of history too. Let us not ignore the fact that 9/11 was not the largest attack on this land. There were thousands, including two near and on the World Trade Center site of Wappinger or Lenape, on what was then known as New Amsterdam, what today is Manhattan, where the mythical exchange of trinkets, or $24 for ownership of a fishing port, used and shared by many native nations because of its abundance of shellfish and fish. The natives, not having the concept of ownership, concluded that the Dutch were thanking them or sharing with them their appreciation. Once the natives returned to the area, the occupiers massacred the indigenous people. A game of kickball was then played with the decapitated heads of natives. In 1539, Hernando de Soto, with 1,000 men, landed and marched north through Florida, Georgia, the Carolinas, then southwest through Tennessee and into Alabama. On October 12, 1540, he had his first meeting with Tuscaloosa, or Black Warrior Chief of the Maubila, de Soto. Of the Maubila, M-A-U-B-I-L-A. De Soto then takes the chief hostage. On October 18th, De Soto attacks the natives at the town of Maubila. In short, 18 soldiers fell in combat. 250 were wounded, leaving the Maubilan city burned and 10,000 natives killed, including Chief Tuscaloosa. In one afternoon, the town of Maubila was erased from the maps of the day. The Maubila have no word for war. Enough said. Denial remains. So I'm taking a while to get to the actual book review, but it's the point of this is it's important to say that this book is no surprise. This stuff has been ingrained since the get-go, as that history shows, like in 1540. And I wanted to show that too, the consciousness. The Maubila have no word for war. Enough said, denial remains. People still rub up against that and try to dance around that. But I wanted to make this point of the warrior, where the warrior culture comes from and where the violence comes from. It is not native to this land, which is refreshing to realize that if we can just tap into the energies of this land as one solution, we could bring about more peace. So, and to get around to part of why I brought up some of the native perspective is that towards the end of Roloff's book, she does mention the natives, indigenous peoples a bunch of times, but towards the end of the book is a key bit to show how ingrained this has been going on since, you know, 1492 and the DeSoto quote, 1540. This is in the section of public schools, Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps, JROTC. In high schools and middle schools, the Department of Defense's Junior Reserve Officers Training Corps has a curriculum that includes marching, physical training, shooting, and military history and ideology. There are more than 3,000 schools with these programs representing all service branches. And here's the quote from some article called The Militarization of American Life by Sam Smith. At a time that schools are trying desperately to discourage violence, the JROTC is teaching students how to kill more effectively. It is also teaching them in a text that addresses the, quote, Indian menace, end quote, that, quote, fortunately, the government policy of pushing the Indians farther west, then wiping them out, was carried out successfully, end quote. That's from 1996 article. Well, not totally successfully, because they're still around. They're still here, folks. And there it is, though. That, to me, is the, if anything was not mentioned enough in the book, but she mentions it, so kudos to her. That is the what I would consider the underpinning of this whole military industrial complex war machine, is as exemplified with the Truman Doctrine, et cetera, et cetera, that they consider the Indian menace. So that's where their work needs to be to change the attitudes and perspectives and the consciousness. And that is like probably the gist of reasons for why this is being presented here in this podcast, is to help shift the consciousness, help shift this tip the scale, because the more people that are against this insanity, ultimately will override the insanity. I think that's it about on the quotes, but I wanted to, I'll read the introduction to Roloff's book, Why Is There So Much Acceptance of and So Little Protest Against Our Government's Illegal and Immoral Wars and Other Military Operations? Why is there mostly silence about the death and destruction that wars and even the preparation for war inflict on people, including the troops and on the environment? Why is there so little concern about the potential for the extinction of human and or other life posed by nuclear war, now seen as an option, in quotes, by the U.S. and other militaries? While propaganda, fear, and distractions are some of the reasons the interest created by military's penetration into so many aspects of civilian life is largely ignored, this book is an attempt to make visible the enormity of this penetration and the interests concerned. So that's why I wanted to take extra time to present this, and this could be a multi-part series because of, as she says, the enormity. And this is a 2022 book published by Clarity Press. The trillion-dollar silencer, why there is so little anti-war protest in the United States. And sadly, it goes on today. Here's another statistic. I know they say that you have to touch people's emotions to get through to them, but I personally find statistics can help, and then, maybe you have to process that. Okay, so what's going on in the Middle East? The U.S. sending billions of dollars to Israel, tax dollars supporting genocidal activities of Israel has killed 23... Here's a recent statistic I read. 23,084 Palestinians since the start of its renewed war on Gaza. According to data released from Gaza's health ministry, at least 58,926 have also been injured, and approximately 70% of that, I've read, is women and children. There is another moment of silence, another moment of trillion-dollar silencer. So that'll do it for this part one. And this is Get Lit with Literature. Thanks for listening. Be well.